south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's talk about crime, assaults, robberies, etc. in Latin America. After all, if you're going to have a plan B, a number one concern is safety. If you don't have that, well, everything else is up for grabs. Now, you know, 90% of the lame street news reported out of Latin America is negative because, you know the saying, if it bleeds, it leads. No one, especially in the States, wants to hear about happy, stress-free people enjoying themselves in a paradise south of the border. They want to hear about riots, killings, earthquakes, volcanoes, floods, hurricanes, kidnappings, extortions. I mean, really. No one wants to hear about a guy living in a tropical paradise, sitting by the pool with his pet sloth and toucan, living high off the hog on his $1,500 a month Social Security check. That kind of news is boring. It does not sell. Funny thing is, though, I still have a certain group of people sending me emails saying, Johnny, are you sure I can live decently on my $3,000 a month pension? And I'm thinking, how many times do I have to tell you $3,000 a month? You're in the 1% crowd. You're upper middle class here in Latin America. Though it seems a huge percentage of people just don't want to believe that. I'd even go so far as to say if you polled people on the street in, let's say, New Jersey or Chicago, 9 out of 10 of them would say they'd never move to Latin America, even if they could live the life of Riley, much better than they're living now. Even if that's true, they think it's just too dangerous. How strange is it that we get such negative opinions about Latin America almost exclusively from people who've never even visited there? Armchair tourists. My Chicago buddy Tony Caudill, one of the best lead players I ever saw. But he never really made it because he wasn't dependable and liked to drink. In fact, you pick your guitar hero, even Hendrix. Tony Caudill could play all that, dead drunk on stage, laying on his back. Many times during our last set, that's exactly how he ended up. He used to say, Johnny, isn't it funny that the most vocal, even famous music critics can't play a note themselves? Man, he was right about that. It reminds me of parents who talk about other kids not being brought up right. I can't even count the times bad parents have accused other parents of being bad parents, while being oblivious to the fact that their own kids are monsters. Hey, I've experienced that in my own family, so I've learned not to chime in because apparently I don't have a say in the matter because I don't have any kids. I guess there's some kind of unwritten law that you have to be a bad parent to recognize other bad parents. But I digress, but not too much, because the subject here is crimes and misdemeanors in Latin America and how gringos and expats point the finger at others while not recognizing the disasters they're creating in their own backyards. More on that subject from listener Kirsten. She says, Johnny, Americans are hypocrites. At times, I've been guilty of it myself. She says, crime in the U.S. is escalating beyond control. Thanks to the internet, there seems to be a sort of closet industry around young people, mostly entitled white kids and African-American males, stealing luxury goods from high-end stores in places like New York, LA, Chicago, and San Francisco. There are plenty of videos showing them leisurely cleaning out big box stores and drug stores like Walgreens, too. And when looters see the cops or someone starts filming them, they don't run. They just casually walk out, as if they were out for the day just shopping. Oh, and have you checked out the YouTube and other videos of rednecks and people of color assaulting Asian Americans too? Johnny, you talked about the fact that in many states now, it's not even a crime or misdemeanor worthy of hauling someone down to the police station unless they've stolen over $700 or $800 worth of goods. I wish that had been the case when I was a young, stupid, moron adolescent kid. And now that everyone hates the police and no one wants to be one anymore, their morale is at an all-time low and they won't stick their necks out for anyone. Just one iffy internet video and your career is over. You're canceled. It's only a natural, logical conclusion that there are large increases in violent crime in most all U.S. cities now. In fact, if you live in any North American big city, everyone knows there are multiple areas it's dangerous to walk in by day and dangerous to walk at night in places that were previously crime-free. And the date that all hit the fan can be tracked back precisely to the George Floyd incident. I don't have to tell you what Chicago, Detroit, New York, San Francisco, and L.A. have turned into. Scarier yet is the realization, if you are robbed, assaulted, or find your car ripped off or vandalized, you can be nearly 100% certain the person, even if he's caught, will never be held accountable. In a previous show, you mentioned some stats yourself, saying how a criminal has to be convicted of a crime multiple times in court before he ever does a day in jail. The thing I don't get, Johnny, is you hear all the time that the United States has the most percentage of people incarcerated per capita, yet most criminals get caught and released, or not even picked up at all. I don't get it. Is it just that the U.S. might have a criminally high percentage of criminals? Someone needs to explain it to me. I don't get it. Though it's absolutely true, since the arrival of viral videos and the cancel culture, police have backed off to such an extent they find arresting people causes more trouble than it's worth. You can imagine then that the cops are forever having to watch their back and defend their decisions too, as if it's more likely they broke the rules than the person they arrested. The cops are the suspects now, not the criminals. And still, if you ask the average American about living a life in Latin America, they'll say it's simply not safe, just loaded with narcos, extortionists, and kidnappers. Anyway, Johnny, enough of the rant. Keep up the good work. I'll be at your next seminar for sure. Signed, Kirsten from Portland. Oh, Portland. Yeah, right. She ought to know about crime. They defunded the police there, right? Enough said about that. And then comes this email from a 50-something Brit named Colin, who's living in Costa Rica. He says, Johnny, you see lots of internet websites and blogs saying you can live in Costa Rica for $1,500 a month. And you, Johnny, say it's just not true. It can't be done. So who's right, the internet gurus or expert expat Johnny? Well, Johnny, I'm here to tell you you're wrong. It can be done. I know. I've been doing it for the last 3 years. I'm the living proof. But to pull it off, you'll have to follow a certain set of rules. In other words, there are certain caveats to that claim. Number one, I live in a neighborhood where everything's within walking distance, so I don't need a car, and I don't have a car payment or have to pay for gas. I can walk everywhere. Number two, everything I eat is grown or produced locally. If I started buying imported food and started eating at the local restaurants, even the cheapy ones, that would blow my budget. He says I spend $300 a month for rent, but it's a pure Costa Rican-style apartment. That means the pushcart guys hawking their goods and the driveway chickens are clucking and crowing and on the street at all hours. I admit at first there were lots of sleepless nights, but within a month I got used to it. He says things are cheaper in the small town he lives in, but being in a small town, there are very few cultural activities for foreigners, though that's great for a person on a tight budget. Then he says the town he lives in is so small, the little national healthcare clinic doesn't even have ambulance service. I'm 56, he says, and I don't like thinking ahead till I'm 70 or 80, but obviously my healthcare wants and needs will be quite different. I'm thinking being on the national healthcare system, living in a small town without ambulance service, would not be such a wise decision for me as I get old and decrepit. Then he says, also in small towns like the one I'm in, there are lots of power outages. What people don't think about much is that when the power's out, so is your water, because water pumps run on electricity. Oh, and Johnny, I noticed you talk a lot about having a maid, maintenance guy, or gardener. For me and most single guys living alone in an apartment, we don't need a full-time maid. Maybe once a week would be good. But in Costa Rica, if you have a maid come in one day a week, she's going to charge you a lot of money because she wants a full-time job, working at a place 3 to 5 days a week. You mentioned in places off the tourist trail, like Honduras, Guatemala, and Salvador, the going rate for a maid is $15 or $20 a day. In Costa Rica, you pay twice that and more. So for me to pay $40 or $50 for a maid to clean my little apartment, my budget just won't allow it, so I'd rather do it myself. But those are some of the dilemmas you'll have to face if you're living in Costa Rica on $1,500 a month. But you do get used to it. The thing is, living in a small town in the boonies or a sort of dingy neighborhood is the trade-off when you've only got $300 a month to spend for rent. As far as my internet plan, I have a cheap smartphone and a pay-as-you-go plan. A decent monthly plan would be way too expensive. So I just take $10, charge up my cell phone. It lasts me maybe a week and a half or two. Plus, the pay-as-you-go plan includes a couple of gigabytes to run a hotspot when I want to use my computer. Then there's healthcare. He says, I pay about $100 a month to participate in the country's socialized healthcare medical system. It's perfectly fine for bumps, knocks, falls, trauma, the usual aches and pains and stuff. However, for anything beyond that, the lines are long, and once you do get an appointment, you'll often find the clinic's hours have changed, the doctor's not in, or maybe he's on vacation. But still, it's adequate for the basic stuff. However, he said, when I developed a detached retina, I paid for the procedure out of pocket at a private clinic because I didn't want to wait the week, which could have turned into months, for the required surgery in the public system. Going to a private clinic, he says he paid about $5,000 to have it done. Though he said, Johnny, you're right. Crime and petty theft here are a problem. And on the increase, it's noticeably worse than it was 3 years ago when I first arrived. But I dress down like a backpacker and don't wear any jewelry or have a flashy, expensive smartphone or an Apple anything. So I'm on no bad guy's hit list. At least I don't think so. You're right on another count too, Johnny. I just cannot learn my Spanish. Not that I don't want to or don't have the aptitude. It's just that every Costa Rican wants to speak English with me. They know if they can, they can work in the tourism business and get tips from gringos, Europeans, and other foreigners in dollars. It's a well-known fact, and you hear locals mention once in a while, that Latinos, Russians, and Germans are terrible tippers. So I guess that's all for now, Johnny. I just thought people ought to know that it is possible to live in Costa Rica for $1,500 a month. And for a retired couple, something more like $2,500 a month. But that kind of budget's out of the question if you're in the dating scene. Because then you'll be dating, going to restaurants, bars, events, and that will completely discombobulate your budget. Then he says, hang in there and keep plugging, Johnny. Signed, Colin, on the budget plan in Costa Rica. All right, thanks for that, Colin. And, you know, I haven't heard that word discombobulate since I don't know when. All right, changing up a bit. Here's another sad development that's directly due to gringos piling in certain areas in Latin America. This is from the Ecuador daily newspaper El Mercurio. Again, Ecuador has been on International Living's top 5 destinations for gringos and expats for a dozen years now. And now, in certain areas, the place is starting to look like Costa Rica. Anyway, since so many gringos and expats move down, buy some land, and decide to build, well, naturally, the bureaucratic slugs want a piece of that action, as nicely pointed out in this article, and I'll translate. The title of the article? Persistent obstacles exist to urban planning, building, and development. It starts off saying, it now takes well over 2 months to get a building permit or certificate of condition and a license to build in Ecuador. And if the land or lot to be built on doesn't match the description found in the municipality's land records, the owner or builder will have to have the land resurveyed. And it says if you're going to build at all, you have to have the plans drawn up by a registered and certified architect. That's a given. Then you have to apply to the government for what's called a certificate of condition, an urban license to build, commonly known as a linea de fabrica. Based on that, in the end, bureaucrats will tell you if you can or cannot build on your property. That means you could own or buy a choice piece of land that the government won't even let you build on. It's a possibility. It's all up to them. Man, that sucks. It says here, if you're going to build on a new or raw piece of land, you must comply with certain government requirements, including a georeferencia, a topographical survey. It must be done by a certified professional surveyor, too. And then it says, get this. You must provide your cedula or passport and your voting certificate to apply for that building permit. So if you're not a resident or citizen, I imagine your architect will stand in for you and supply that paperwork. Then it says, after you have the survey done, the building and land department will decide if there are any errors and or discrepancies compared to any old surveys in the registry. They will decide if the old and new surveys are close enough within instrumentation and calculation error. Because, as it turns out, almost all new surveys have some bit of error compared to surveys done with rudimentary equipment, like knotted ropes by surveyors on horseback. Typical equipment used by surveyors 100 or so years ago. For example, since all surveys done before the invention of the transit were done with knotted rope on horseback, that means your land would vary in size depending on if the rope was wet, dry, or humid, dependent too on the technique of the surveyor on horseback. So these days, with each new modern survey, discrepancies large and small show up all the time. So these days, government slugs decide on a case-by-case basis whether the errors and discrepancies are technically acceptable, which can add 3 to 4 months extra to the process of getting a building permit. Bottom line, since gringos have piled in, with many farmers and developers subdividing their land into lots, and all new building on raw land requiring another survey. Even architects and builders are having a hard time unraveling all that extra paperwork, getting permit after permit, and jumping through the ever-accumulating hoops. Sound familiar? It's the same curse builders and architects have up in the States. Have you ever tried to build or remodel anything up in the States? I have. It was a nightmare, even 30-plus years ago when I last built a house in the Chicagoland area. I vowed I'd never do that again. I didn't. A few years later, I threw in the towel and ended up in Latin America for good. Meanwhile, off the gringo tourist trail, if you're going to build something from scratch, all you need is a local architect. They'll push through all the paperwork, get the permits, do all the legwork for you. And usually after the architects finish the blueprints, it only takes a week or two to get the building permit. And if you need a new survey, the architect will arrange that too. And though I'm sure the same problem exists, an old survey from 100 or 200 years ago doesn't quite match up with the new one. I'm sure that happens all the time. It has to. But I've never ever heard of it holding up the permit and building process. If you're building on raw land off the Gringo Tourist Trail, the Municipality Permits and Inspections Department will always accept the most recent survey. And if someone, a neighbor or whatever, wants to contest a land survey, they can take it to court, but I've never ever heard of a case where that's happened. Not off the Gringo Tourist Trail, anyway. I myself have been involved in at least 13 different building projects in 4 different Latin countries. And I've never heard of a modern, recent survey being contested. Though I have to admit, a lot of old-time farmers with big spreads don't exactly know their own land boundaries. Oh, they might say their land stretches to a certain big rock, river, or tree. But until a registered surveyor comes out, no one knows exactly for sure. By the way, here in Latin America, when a property's surveyed, where 2 property line corners intersect on a lot, the surveyor will dig a little hole about 4 inches deep, and as wide as a dinner plate. He'll mix up some cement, pour it in that hole, and scratch into the wet cement where the 2 lines intersect. He'll also scratch a number there and the surveyor's initials. And that little cement marker is called a mojón. Mojón. And since we're talking about living in the tropics where the plants grow like crazy, usually in a year or so, those mojones are completely buried with new-grown brush, often difficult to locate a few years down the line. But they're there, all right. I've stumbled on a few myself while excavating a few trenches for electric and security camber cable. All right, speaking of digging holes and trenches on your land and property, one thing you really have to keep in mind, here in Latin America, there's no frost. Therefore, no frost line to worry about. So unlike up in the States, when you dig a trench and lay pipes or tubes, whatever, you got to go below the frost line or your water lines will freeze, etc. Building footings must be below the frost line too. That means you got to go something like 3 feet down or more, for Chicago anyway. It varies, you know. The farther north you go, the deeper the frost line. And since there are no such hazards here in Latin America, builders, contractors, and handymen will bury a cable or a pipe, sometimes just 6 or 8 inches underground. In fact, many times you'll be walking around, not just out in the boonies, but in the city too. And you'll see a green, white, or metal, water, or electrical pipe poking ever so slightly up through the soil. So remember that next time you're digging in your backyard. Unless, of course, you're the guy who supervised or did the construction on the project and you know exactly where every pipe is. And by the way, I do suggest when you build anything here in Latin America, you take photos everywhere you lay a water pipe or electrical line. That includes electrical pipes, lines, and tubes in your walls. Because I know bad things can happen. It's happened to me. I have drilled holes in concrete block walls here in Latin America to hang a picture, a mirror, put up a shelf, and had the bad luck of hitting a water pipe. And now that simple little 5-minute project turns into a real adventure. Thing is, most good quality buildings have block and concrete walls. And if you hit an electric or water line, to repair it, you'll have to blast out a big section of that wall. And you better have a good idea where the pipes and tubes run underneath your floor, too. Most homes and businesses have tile floors with a concrete base. So if there's a small leak or an electrical problem in one of the tubes under your floor, well, you know, it's always worse when there's a water leak, because often when you first detect a small water leak, it's not at all obvious that the break is where you're seeing the water seepage. By the way, every time I've had to chase down a water leak, it wasn't the pipe itself that failed. It was at the coupling joint or elbow where pipes were connected and glued. It's almost always been a failure of the pipe glue itself. Though it's really not the fault of the glue, it's the way the surfaces were prepared before they were glued. I've noticed Latino plumbers are notoriously sloppy when setting pipe joints. You're supposed to use a liquid pipe cleaner, it's acetone actually, to wipe and clean the joint before you glue the pipes together. That's standard practice up in the first world. Well, I've never, ever seen a Latino plumber with acetone cleaner on hand. Instead, they just wipe the ends down with a rag or thinner. And that will work, but over time, those are the joints that always seem to fail. But, you know, that's the way things are done here in Latin America. Someone comes in, does some plumbing or electrical. When they're done, they flip the switches or turn on a water valve, and if everything's fine, hell, the job's done. Pay me, I'm out of here. So what are you supposed to do? Well, I remember once when a plumber was doing a job, I saw he was doing the usual Latino plumber thing, just wiping down the joints with a cloth before joining them. Well, instead of scolding him, I just went to the hardware store, bought a quart of acetone. I think it was $8. I said, look, I want to see you use this on every joint. No problem. He was happy to do it. Thing is, it's all about the money. The plumbers don't want to buy the acetone. Besides, if you leave the cap off the can or bottle, when you come back a few hours later to use it again, the container is likely to be dry as a bone. It's so volatile, it evaporates faster than a stimmy check at a Vegas strip club. Anyway, I repeat, you really must take photos of the pipes and tubes in your walls, and especially under the floor, before they pour the concrete and put the tile down, of course. Because if you don't, and there is an electrical problem under the floor or a leak, it would be a miracle if you could solve the problem yourself without calling in a gang of plumbers, electricians, and concrete guys. All right, speaking of miracles, how about this email from Eddie? Not our favorite rags to riches expat Eddie, but Eddie. He says, dear Johnny, the other day I was listening to your podcast and it miraculously paused as my six-year-old brought up his artwork of the risen Christ. All right, me Johnny here. By the way, he sent me a scan of the artwork too. Really good for a kid his age. However, it's a typical white privileged Caucasian Jesus. He'll probably get canceled for that. Or maybe 15 years from now, it'll come back to haunt him in a job interview. Man, am I glad I'm living in Latin America. But I digress, as usual. Anyway, Ed says, he was proud of his art project he had made at a Catholic school. He proudly told me about it and went back to playing. Seconds later, after leaving, your podcast miraculously resumed playing all by itself. On that note, he says, I find your talks about your personal faith interesting. I understand you were a believer in your childhood and became an atheist in college. And at this stage in your life, it sounds like you're open to religion. As for me, I struggle with my own faith as well. However, it sounds like Jesus was there when I was listening to your podcast. That said, I love your podcast. I appreciate that you speak your mind, and no matter what the Marxists may say, you keep on keeping on. So do keep on with that podcast. I enjoy listening. A loyal listener from Reading, Pottsylvania. Ed. Pottsylvania. Isn't that where Rocky and Bullwinkle came from? Or maybe it was Boris and Natasha, not Moose and Squirrel. Anyway, thanks for that, Ed. Speaking of small miracles, you know, once expat Eddie and I were in a bar in Costa Rica and he flipped a coin. I don't know what for, but he flipped it and it landed on its edge on the bar. Really, what are the chances, right? And the bartender saw it. He said, man, that's a miracle. And the gringo sitting on the other side of Eddie said, I'll bet you $100 you can't do it again. I said, Eddie, take that bet, but tell him you want 6,000 tries. Because, as it turns out, every 6,000 times you toss a nickel, it will, according to probability statistics, land on its edge. Now, you're up to around 10 or 11,000 if it's a quarter, because it's bigger with a higher center of gravity. But for Eddie's nickel, 6,000. Point being, not all miracles are miracles. They're statistical anomalies. What a digression, huh? You know, speaking of religious conundrums, Ed, here's something I never understood. What the hell does six ways from Sunday mean? Well, I know how to use it, what it suggests, but what the hell did it come from and why? I remember back in the States, I used to hear people say that once in a while. Like, for example, she was all over the road driving six ways from Sunday. You know, I used to think it was the other 6 days of the week, you know, Sunday being the seventh. But then I heard people say two ways from Sunday or five ways from Sunday. Just one of life's mysteries, I guess. Oh, and speaking of lost in translation, you know, those kinds of sayings called dichos in Spanish, Latinos who speak English but learned it secondhand, not in the States, never get it. Like, for example, once I was sitting with a well-educated Latino guy, and one of the gringos in the group said the phrase, clean as a whistle. And the Latino guy looked puzzled. Like I said, he had very good English, but he'd never been to the States. He learned it in Guatemala at a helicopter school. He looked puzzled and said, what's so clean about a whistle? I don't get it. He didn't know if they were talking about the act of whistling or a whistle itself. As a matter of fact, when he mentioned that, I didn't quite know either. Why a whistle? A physical whistle's not clean. It's got spit all over it. Or maybe a whistle is a clean, pure sound. I don't know. Oh, another time I was at a party with my Latina girlfriend. She spoke English pretty well. She'd never been to the States, but took English classes at night. Anyway, there were a couple of gringos there. We were speaking English. She got it all till someone said, "Money talks, bull walks." Then her face kind of scrunched up. She said, "It talks? What does it say?" Suddenly, silence. Then one of the gringos laughed, thinking she was trying to say something clever. But she wasn't trying to be funny. She was asking a serious question. So when he left, she got slightly embarrassed and said, "Oh, I get it, I think. Is it about the dead presidents you have on your money?" By then, we were all confused. She said, "Your gringo money might talk, but mine doesn't," she said. She was talking about the Honduran Lempira. Boy, did she get that right. Then somebody clued her in. That's what you call lost in translation. And in reverse, you know, things are lost in translation all the time, too. For example, in Venezuela, Colombia, and Dominican Republic, their most vulgar and insulting swear word is mama huevo. Literally translated means your mother's balls. But man, them's fighting words if you say them to someone you don't know. In those three countries, it's the biggest insult there is, mama huevo. In the DR, Colombia, and Venezuela, it's never used by people in polite society. It's their equivalent of calling someone a mofo. You know what I mean. Yet the English translation is so innocent. All right, we're getting towards the end of the show now, and I'd just like to mention to all you people out there who use Wikipedia a lot, I know I use it once in a while, but as you probably know, the editors are all woke, and they cancel people and delete things that don't follow their extremely biased liberal agenda. You know, if you're listed on there and they don't like what you're saying, they'll just smear the hell out of you. You're a bigot, racist, or conspiracy theorist. Anyone who disagrees with the big pharma, big government, plandemic crap is a conspiracy theorist. But you probably know that already. The reason why I'm bringing this up is because a YouTube just came out on July 14th, and I assume it's going to get canceled pretty soon, too. It's a half-hour interview with Larry Sanger, one of the original founders of Wikipedia. He says, right off the bat in the interview, "I no longer trust the very website I created, Wikipedia." He's afraid he too will be a victim of Wikipedia's policies. How about that? He says they manipulate, cancel, edit, and select the data they like to further their woke leftist agenda all the time. So any of you listeners out there who put your full faith and trust in what you read on Wikipedia, man, you ought to hear this interview. Just send me an email at expatfiles@gmail.com and I'll send you the link. Now, as for me, for example, if I'm watching an old movie and I want to look up one of the long-dead stars or directors, I'll check it out on Wikipedia. I mean, they usually don't screw too much with a biography of a non-controversial dead guy or gal historical figure. They do their dirty work on controversial people who are living and breathing and with current events like 9/11, the Kennedy assassination. Any deviation from the Main Street media line and you're a conspiracy theorist. Meanwhile, Wikipedia is forever whitewashing people like the Clintons, Obama, Gates, Dr. Fauci, the Biden family, etc., etc. But you knew that already, right? Problem is, people have come to look at Wikipedia like it's the internet version of the Oxford Dictionary. And man, is that a dangerous assumption.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.